The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Florence Nash from Triangle Radio Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the new issue of AARP magazine. That is AARP for April-May 2018. And our programming today is generously underwritten by Salibi Chiropractic. Salibi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call 919-782-4733. That's 919-782-4733. Now we're going to start off with our cover article, which is on Melissa McCarthy. Actor, comedian, designer, farm girl, mother, daughter. This is by David Hockman. If you want to see the real Melissa, put her in a room with this woman. It's one of those classic mom stories that keep getting better with age. In the Illinois farm country where actress and comedian Melissa McCarthy grew up, her mother, Sandy McCarthy, would sometimes discover an abandoned box of kittens and, without fail, would take in the whole litter as pets. On a farm, it's great, Melissa says. They live outside, you don't have mice, and when someone comes to your house for the first time, 25 to 30 cats run toward the car, like in a horror movie. Sandy laughs, even though she knows that's not the funny part. Every night, she adds, I'd set out a big pan of cat food on our back stoop, and the kitties would gather around to eat and nuzzle up to me. One night, it was dark. For some reason, I didn't switch on the little light that's out there. I'm petting one of the cats, but the rest are staying away. I go back to the house, turn on the light. She'd been petting a skunk, Melissa says. Now they're both howling. I'd been petting a skunk, Sandy admits. It's been like this all day. Now, at McCarthy's gorgeous office, which she designed and which overlooks the Warner Brothers back lot in Burbank, California, mother and daughter trade family anecdotes, occasionally breaking for hee-hawing hysterics. There was the time around age 3 or 4 when Melissa scared her great-grandmother half to death by scissoring off her pigtails while Sandy was at work. I come home to my grandmother sobbing at the kitchen table and Missy dancing around going, look how nice and neat I am, Sandy recalls. That reminds Melissa of her brief goth punk phase in high school when she dyed her light brown hair raven blue-black, expecting a standing ovation, she says. Instead, Mom just took a picture and was like, you're going to laugh at this later. And now, of course, it's the funniest thing ever. At 47, McCarthy is among the highest-paid, most buzzed-about actresses working today, with successes ranging from the sitcom Mike and Molly, for which she won an Emmy, to her nervy breakout movie role in Bridesmaids, which earned her an Oscar nod. Then there was her gum-chewing, podium-pushing turn last year on Saturday Night Live as White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer, a caricature that cracked up the nation across party lines. I think people just needed an outlet and a release and something to laugh at, she says. She has a clothing line, too, for customers of all sizes, and a thriving production company that's behind such projects as her new film comedy, Life of the Party, about a mother who enrolls at her daughter's university, to be released on May 31. Oh, sorry, to be released on May 11. That's what McCarthy does. But you can tell that who she is has more to do with the kindly silver-haired lady who has just returned to the conversation with a plate of snacks and treats to share. You've got to try these deviled eggs, Sandy, 74, offers, or maybe some of this guacamole bread. I've learned so much from my mother, says Melissa, starting with the fact that the world's a nicer, happier place if everybody has a sandwich. After an insightful and, yes, side-splitting day with these two, it's clear that even when you're a big Hollywood star, even when you have a supportive husband and 2 kids of your own, even when you're a comedy queen Melissa McCarthy, you still look to Mom for truth and serious meaning in life. Here's why Mother knows best. You can go your own way. She called me up one day and said, "Mom, I got a one-way ticket to New York," Sandy remembers. Melissa was 20, a bored, sometime college student living in Boulder, Colorado, with bigger dreams, including a New York fashion career. I just said, "Oh." The actress grew up in a home her parents rented on a corn and soybean farm in rural Plainfield, Illinois. She was the second of two daughters for Sandy, who worked for the World Book Encyclopedia, and Mike, an arbitrator for a Chicago railroad company. The couple, who spent the winter in Los Angeles and planned to divide their time between Illinois and L.A., recently celebrated 54 years together. Sandy's grandmother lived with them, too, in a house with just one bathroom, run on sturdy Midwestern values, church on Sunday, grace before meals, Catholic school education, and an emphasis on manners and hard work. Melissa began working multiple jobs from the time she was 16, including one as a waitress at a nursing home across the street from her high school. "I straight up loved being with people over 65, she explains, "because I'd instantly get perspective on the not-so-well-formed experience I was currently having. When somebody who's 80 tells you it's going to be okay, you take that in." Although Mike originally moved the family to the countryside to keep his daughters safe from big city influences, Melissa just couldn't stay away. She'd drive an hour to hang out in Chicago, dancing at music clubs, and when a high school friend urged her to ditch Boulder for the wilds of Manhattan, she went without a master plan. Looking back now, the wonder for McCarthy isn't that she showed up in New York City with just $45 in her pocket, or that her friend didn't actually have an apartment but was living on someone's couch, or even that McCarthy got herself on stage for her first ever stand-up gig within 24 hours of arriving. It's that her parents never tried to stop her. "We just said, if she doesn't want to go to college, okay, let's give her this new thing to try," says Sandy. Which is kind of terrible parental advice, Melissa notes, but also the greatest thing I could have possibly asked for. Mom never said you can't, but that's how she is about everything. She gave me the freedom to do what I needed, even if she didn't understand it. A normal parent might have said, "You're insane." Instead, this maniac kept saying, "Okay, good luck. Let me know what play you're doing." I was like, "My mother's crazy." Don't stop till you get enough. In your 20s, oftentimes you don't have anything else to worry about other than your narcissistic self, says McCarthy, reflecting on her long road to success. You cry if you don't have the right shirt. You cry if you have work. You cry if you don't have work. It's the worst night of your life if you can't get in to see some band. For a slightly adrift, rejection-prone Midwesterner, being young, single, and broke in New York proved to be nearly as discombobulating as life on a farm was solid. "I knew I wanted something, but I didn't know exactly what," she adds. "Way longer than I should have been, I was looking to my parents for help when I couldn't quite make it." For Sandy, that would take the form of a phone call. There was the ring, ring, ring. "It's time to pay the rent, and I'll have the money if this and that works out." And so I'd write out a check. Even now, Melissa gets tears in her eyes from the gratitude she feels. "I don't know how you did it, Mom," she says. "I would have said, 'This is silly. You're not going to become an actor. The odds of this are ridiculous, and you should move home and knock it off.' But you just send me $70, $200. The fact that you didn't give me guilt changed the course of my life, because if I'd been guilted out, I definitely would have quit." Now it's Sandy who is misting up. "As long as you had a place to live and a bank for depositing a check, I knew you were trying," she responds. "You always knew who you were, and I knew you'd be fine." At 27, Melissa bought another one-way ticket. "I could never afford round trip," she says, this time to Los Angeles. At the famous Groundlings Theater Company, where everyone from Paul Rubens, Pee Wee Herman, to Will Ferrell got their start, McCarthy sat next to a low-key young man 3 years her junior. It turned out that Ben Falcone was also from Illinois, also a stand-up comic, and soon would be the calm, centered yin to McCarthy's brassy, fast-talking yang. She did these high-energy versions of Midwestern moms or angry cops who always put their foot in their mouth, Falcone recalls, and I thought, this is the funniest woman on earth. By the time she was 30, McCarthy and Falcone were living together, and McCarthy had her first major acting gig as the klutzy culinary whiz Sookie St. James on the mother-daughter hit show Gilmore Girls. It took McCarthy only a decade to become an overnight success. She learned from her mom, as Falcone puts it, the attitude that we'll always be able to make things happen. We'll sell things, we'll move, we'll work at a restaurant. One way or another, we'll get there. But let's not worry. Married since 2005, with two daughters, Vivian 10 and Georgette 8, McCarthy and Falcone like doing as many projects together as they can. If you saw Bridesmaids, you'll remember Falcone as the creepy air marshal who ends up in an improbable sex scene involving McCarthy and, well, a giant hoagie. Sandy may be right about those sandwiches. Falcone also co-wrote and directed McCarthy in the comedy Tammy, as well as directed Life of the Party, their new mom in college farce, reminiscent of the 1980s Rodney Dangerfield classic Back to School. It's like that with the entire McCarthy-Falcone crew. In an industry that's known for testing relationships to the max, McCarthy and company look for ways to stay connected. McCarthy's and Falcone's dads make cameos in Life of the Party, and the couple's daughters were on the set to meet singer Christina Aguilera, who performs in the movie. On Jimmy Kimmel Live last year, when McCarthy guest-hosted, Sandy and Mike played an uproarious game of Who Loves Their Daughter More? Sandy went home the winner with cans of corned beef hash. More meaningful is the fact that McCarthy's parents recently decided to try an extended stint in Los Angeles. They stayed in the actress's former house, which she and Falcone still own, roughly a minute from their new home, which the couple also designed from the ground up. And even McCarthy is surprised at her level of pleasure whenever she has Mom and Dad nearby. It's been the first time we've lived in the same city since I was 18, and it just feels like heaven, she says. When parents live far away and they come visit, you do things together and it's great. But to be able to do the stupid everyday stuff, let's go for coffee, let's have breakfast, or come over and play rummy or, you know, with the kids and try my bean soup, it's absolutely the greatest thing ever. Just be you at any age. In person, McCarthy is as unpretentious, likable, and out-and-out funny as her public image would suggest. What's perhaps unexpected is that she's also quite thoughtful, even philosophical. After a day of nonstop chatting, Sandy says her goodbyes, along with, "Maybe I should take some of these deviled eggs for Dad." And Melissa and I sit alone in her office in the fading afternoon light. It has taken hours for us to get to the topic many interviewers like to focus on with McCarthy, being a plus-size woman in a size-2 celebrity world. And even though she has dropped about 75 pounds over the past couple of years, neither of us finds the size question particularly relevant. "I just find it dumb and boring. I really do," she admits. "No one's asking a man, how do you keep your legs in shape?" Which I've been asked. I think every time we categorize people by weight, by race, by gender, we put them in boxes, and it's not a good thing for the world. That goes for age, too. As she approaches the big 5-0, McCarthy is embracing the possibilities. She wants to learn Italian and French, maybe live in Paris, and see whatever great vistas are around the next corner with Falcone and the girls. "I've never minded getting older," she says. "I've never had that thing of, why can't I still be 35? The older you are, the more interesting you are as a character. There's a whole life history and knowledge of the world and self-possession that come from someone who has seen more. That experienced point of view is always more exciting. Yes, things may start to sag and shift, but the older you are, the wiser, the funnier, and the smarter you are. You become more you." McCarthy's mom, for sure, lives with that outlook. At the photo shoot earlier in the day, the photographer crooned Bruce Springsteen's Sandy, also known as 4th of July, Asbury Park, to her as she danced around the studio with him, like a woman half her age. As Falcone observes, Sandy's got more energy than she can use. It could be 11 degrees in Plainfield, and Sandy will be out walking over ice and stuff. Like Melissa, she's up for anything and an inspiration. I asked McCarthy what kind of woman she'd like to be at her mom's age, and she doesn't hesitate. I hope a crazy one, she tells me. I always say, once I hit 70, it's going to be all caftans and turbans and big wacky glasses. I'm more than halfway there. I see these years ahead as a time to say, what does it matter? You want to wear daisy prints? Who cares? Getting older means knowing yourself. And if you know yourself, express it. That ripples out. It makes the world a happier place. When you're in line for coffee and the older lady in front of you has a daisy print blouse and a smile on her face and something to say about the world, you feel the magic of it. David Hockman, the author of this article, has written for the New York Times, Forbes, GQ, and Playboy, and is a frequent contributor to AARP, the magazine. Next, we've got a tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. by Tyler Perry, who has created 20 feature films, over 20 stage plays, and 9 television shows. His most recent book, Higher is Waiting, was a New York Times bestseller. Keep moving forward. Tyler Perry reflects on Martin Luther King Jr.'s legacy 50 years after the civil rights leader's death. I have vivid memories from my childhood of my great-grandfather, Papa Rod, who was the son of slaves, resting on his bed under a pile of my Aunt May's handmade quilts in the living room of her rural Louisiana home. Above him, nailed to the cracked wall, were 3 ceramic plates with images of our family's heroes, John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, and Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. One morning I remember pointing to the MLK plate and asking Mama, "Who is he? Who is that man?" With tears in her eyes and a voice of solemn reverence, she told me, "Son, that's Martin Luther King, Jr. He was a very special man." I recall my mother was still so overcome with grief over Dr. King's tragic death a few years earlier that she had a hard time speaking more than a sentence or two about him before choking up. After I started school, I learned more about this great man's contributions. I was taught that he inspired people to believe in their dreams of freedom and achievement and to know that equality is everyone's human right. I also learned that he stood for nonviolent strength. Since I was growing up in a home full of emotional and physical brutality, it fascinated me to think that someone could actually change the world without using violence. Those lessons went deep. When I was in my early 20s, I moved to Atlanta. Often I would find myself driving up and down a street called Pace's Ferry Road and dreaming of owning a home on it. Pace's Ferry was dotted with regal mansions, enormous oak trees, and elaborately landscaped gardens. It's still the Beverly Hills of Atlanta, but back then, the neighborhood was a long way from the life I was leading, both literally and figuratively. During that dismal time, there were nights when I was homeless and broke and had to sleep in my car. Yet, no matter how tough life was then, I would tell myself, one day I'll do well enough to live here. I would dream and dream and dream. There were some who tried to stop me from dreaming. But throughout my life, Martin Luther King Jr.'s example stood on the side of inspiration. His commitment to equality, kindness, and love remained a powerful lesson for me. Over a decade later, I returned to Pace's Ferry Road. In 2005, when I was looking to purchase a piece of property, a real estate agent brought me up to a rusty iron gate. The house was so far off the road and so covered with wildly overgrown trees and twisted shrubbery that I couldn't see the structure. She asked if I wanted to walk through the gate and check it out. My first reaction was, no, it just doesn't feel right. It wasn't the dilapidation that put me off. It was more like a sensation that I wasn't welcome. But a few days later, after overcoming my initial response, I decided to buy the place. I had a plan to tear it down and build a new house. Several months later, after the purchase was in progress, an Atlanta sheriff served a summons against me brought by Morton Rolleston, Jr., an infamous Atlanta attorney. Rolleston not only previously owned a downtown motel, ironically called Heart of Atlanta, but also at one time owned the Paces Ferry land where I was planning to build my dream home. Even though Rolleston had lost the property in a malpractice suit, he claimed otherwise. When I showed up in court, Rolleston took a long look at me. I watched as the blood drained from his face. At first, I didn't understand his shocked reaction, though I would soon learn that he owned several properties in the area, and all the deeds contained a provision stating they couldn't be sold to African Americans or Jews. When I heard this, I was taken aback. Rolleston believed so defiantly in his right to discriminate against African Americans that years earlier he had argued the merits of segregation all the way to the Supreme Court. The judge in my case decided in my favor. There was a sort of poetic justice in his ruling. Here I was purchasing a property that was once owned by a staunch segregationist. My mother was so proud when I told her this. One evening I was sharing this story with guests at my Atlanta home, built on the very same Paces Ferry property. One of my guests was the civil rights leader and congressman John Lewis. With an emotional voice, Lewis told me, "I knew that man. I was one of the people who sat in at the lunch counter of his hotel back in the early 60s. Had it not been for Dr. King's dream and vision, the land I call home, where I have entertained guests including President Obama and Dr. King's children, is somewhere I would never have been allowed to live, though I would probably have been allowed to work there as a servant. I may not remember every moment in my life, but I do remember the moments that changed my life, and that evening was one of them. When somebody has walked this earth, and years after that person's death, you're still impacted by their words and deeds, you get a sense that their positive influence will continue for generations to come. Many of the principles Dr. King employed to lead, guide, and inspire others are ones I try to practice in so many aspects of my life, including my work. One quote that holds particular meaning for me is, "Life's most persistent and urgent question is, what are you doing for others?" I've used these words as an internal arrow that pierces my heart and opens it to light and love. MLK's words feed the impulse and desire to reach out to others and help them lift higher and change their lives. Although many may see our country as sorely divided now, I believe that Martin Luther King Jr.'s message of helping others and moving through love will ultimately prevail. MLK said, "Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that." And I want to live as an example of that truth. But it's not always easy. Today I find myself standing in the middle of history with one foot on the neck of the Jim Crow South, a very ugly place, while also standing and embracing the light of "I Have a Dream" professed by Dr. King. Because of Dr. King's dream and the countless people who fought against inequality and for the end of segregation, I am now a successful businessman with hundreds of employees. I am able to live where I want and have my son educated wherever he chooses. We can't be denied because of the color of our skin. I am filled with respect for those who struggled against institutionalized segregation and ultimately helped make it possible for me and so many others to stand in the light and see our dreams manifest. When I think about the courage and strength Dr. King possessed while still a young man, I am overwhelmed with gratitude. I couldn't imagine taking on the challenges he did, standing face to face with mobs of people filled with prejudice and hate, yet possessing the inner strength to stare them down with love. But when you do this, as Dr. King taught, change becomes inevitable. And this change not only affected people of color, it opened the minds and hearts of millions of other Americans as well. To move us away from repression and hate into a country where there's a possibility of freedom and equality for all, Martin Luther King Jr. made the ultimate sacrifice. He gave his life. In the spirit of all he gave, I often ask others, is it too much to show respect, decency, and kindness to someone who doesn't look like you or come from where you come from? Now more than ever, I hear the melody and words of MLK's I Have a Dream speech, and every day I pray that freedom will continue to ring. Even though there's still a lot of work to be done by all of us, I thank God that Dr. King walked this earth and left us with his insight and soulful words of wisdom to help us all overcome. As Dr. King said, if you can't fly, then run. If you can't run, then walk. If you can't walk, then crawl. But whatever you do, you have to keep moving forward. We've just got a couple of minutes left, so here are a couple of nice little shorties from AARP magazine. This is Fast Food, New Jobs for Joe. Got a day-old half pot of room-temperature coffee sitting in a carafe on your kitchen counter? Join the millions. You can microwave a cup and keep drinking, or consider one of these alternative uses as suggested by several cooks and coffee experts. Decaf coffee works fine, too. It's about the flavor, not the jolt. Ice it. Coffee ice cubes are great in iced coffee. They don't dilute the drink as the ice melts. Or add your preferred milk and flavorings to the coffee and pour into popsicle-type molds for a frozen treat tomorrow. Make sauce. After pan-frying chicken or pork, deglaze the pan with coffee rather than wine for a deeper southern-style gravy. Prepare jerky. Marinate beef slices in strong coffee and your favorite flavorings for up to 8 hours, then dry the beef in the oven at 200 degrees Fahrenheit for about 4 hours. Top your pancakes. Combine coffee with melted butter and pour. Brine a chicken. Coffee-based brines that include spices such as cloves, star anise, peppercorns, and, of course, plenty of salt make for a delicious and moist roast chicken. Dress a salad. For a simple coffee vinaigrette, cook equal parts brewed coffee, balsamic vinegar, and maple syrup on the stove at low heat until the mixture is syrupy. Top it off with a little lemon juice. Well, that sounds good. And unexpected. I think that's about all the time we've got today. I'm not going to start anything else. So that's it for today's episode of Modern Maturity. But I hope you'll come back and listen next week. We've got much more good stuff to read from AARP. I hope you've enjoyed this session. I'm Florence Nash, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And our programming is generously underwritten by Salibi Chiropractic. Salibi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call 919-782-4733. That's 919-782-4733. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long till next time. If you've got any comments or questions, do give us a call at 919-832-5138. We'd love to hear from you.